Another assumption you have to take. James Tabor, a professor at the University of Carolina, says this. When he's first buried, it's in a temporary tomb. And later, unless somehow he magically disappears and goes to heaven, which is the position of Christian faith, but if you're going to be historical and realistic, he would have been put in a permanent place as a good Jew, you have to have a family tomb. The next assumption is that the Christian faith is based on magic and it's neither historical nor realistic. Well, I got news for you, Mr. James Tabor. You can call it a magically disappearing Jesus who goes to heaven, but did you know that that is what's in the Bible? Do you even know that, Mr. Tabor? Did you know that there's many educated people who believe in the Christian faith, who believe in the physical resurrection, who believe in the Word of God? A few weeks ago, I showed a video clip of a professor from Harvard University affirming that the Bible is true and that archaeology continues to affirm that the Bible is true. Listen, don't give me the lie that educated people cannot believe in the Word of God. Don't give me the lie that educated people cannot believe in the resurrection of Christ. That's foolish. And he says, you have to be put in a permanent place as a good Jew, which you have to have a family tomb. Why exactly do you have to have a family tomb? Is that another assumption? Another one. The relationship of the ossuaries validates the tomb. Do we know how the ossuaries relate to each other? Not at all. Not at all. But the narrator speaks of the odds of calling for a Jesus with a father of Joseph and a mother named Mary and a brother named Yosef, and that the odds that such an individual would respond are quite low. In other words, if somebody's walking down the street and they responded to Jesus, son of Joseph, your mom's named Mary, your brother is also named Yosef. If that's you, please come to the podium. And of course, it would have to be Jesus of Nazareth. Here's the question with the ossuaries. Did you know that we have no idea what relationship they have to each other? Absolutely zero. Did you know that the one that is marked Yosef could be the father? And that Jesus could be the brother or the grandfather of Mary? We do not know. They did a DNA test. All that the DNA test shows is that Jesus and the supposed Mariamne, who they say is Mary Magdalene, they're not blood relatives. That's the only thing the DNA test showed, that they weren't relatives. It's interesting that in order to make that leap, the people in the documentary say that since they were not married, since they were not related, therefore they must have been married. That's foolish. The Israeli Archaeological Society wrote this, that at least 35 bodies were interred in this grave. It indicates that this was at best a multi-generational family tomb. At least 35 bodies were in there. At least 35 bodies were in that grave. This is a multi-generational tomb. Did you hear me? 35 bodies. Wait a second. How do you know who is who? You don't know who is cousins, who is uncles and aunts and fathers, sons. You have no idea. It's silly to lay them all out and make an assumption. This Mary must have been the mom. Jesus, this other Mary must have been his wife. Judas must have been their son. It's foolish. Another assumption, that Mary Magdalene's family and her followers may have written her name in Greek. They said that's quite likely. Okay, fine. But did you know that they could have also written her name in Aramaic? In fact, the only reason that this statement is made is because it's written in Greek, first of all, and it helps to justify their next statement, that the ossuary is written in Greek. Guess what? Everybody spoke Greek at this time period. This was the Hellenistic period. Thanks to Alexander the Great, everyone spoke Greek. In fact, the entire New Testament was written in Greek. As the disciples went out to preach the gospel, there was one language around the area that was universally known. Guess what? That was Greek. The next assumption. Since Mary's is written in Greek, or Mary Magdalene as they say, this proves that it was Mary Magdalene's, since the name Mariamne is in Greek. This is very weak. Again, everybody spoke Greek. They say that Mary Magdalene, she was a witness to the Greek-speaking Jews. Since this is in Greek, this proves that this was Mary Magdalene. That is foolish. That is strictly foolish. That doesn't prove anything. Simply not the case. Alexander the Great influenced the entire region to speak Greek. In fact, they say that if this is Mary Magdalene, there's only a one chance in 600 that this tomb is not the family tomb. One chance in 600 that it's not the family tomb. They use a statistician named Andre Fehrenberger. After the film was used, seeing the documentary, he made this quote to Ted Koppel of ABC News. He says this, "I must work from the interpretations given to me and from the strength of the calculations that they're based on those assumptions. If for some reason one to read it, the name Mariamne is just a regular form of the name Maria, in that case the calculation produced is not as impressive and the statistical significance would wash out considerably." He says, if this does not mean Mary Magdalene, in other words, all my numbers are foolish, it doesn't even make any sense. It washes out completely. He made this in response to the documentary that really said that this was it. They misquoted the statistician. Another assumption, that Mary Magdalene is the same as the two unnamed women in the Gospel of John. Not true. How do we even know? How would we even begin to say that Mary Magdalene is the same as these two women? Why does this matter for the documentary? It matters because they clearly say that these two examples in Luke and in John, with a woman caught in adultery and another woman who anoints Jesus' feet and dries them with her hair, this proves that her and Jesus had a romantic relationship, which isn't even true. It had nothing to do with anything. But they'll find any unnamed woman he was close to. Call her Mary Magdalene because it helps their argument. A terrible assumption. Another assumption that they cause us to make is that the church fathers were part of this conspiracy against Jesus. It's interesting because in the documentary they show some church fathers who are, you know, they're terrible Catholics, right? In the documentary. And they just want to hide all of this true story of Jesus. Therefore, we see them in the video burning scrolls. They take Mary's records and they take her brother Philip's records and they throw them in the fire because they want to keep all of this revelation from coming out. Terrible documentary. Again, this isn't even just spoke of. They show it to you as if they have secret home video. Listen to me. It's nothing more than assumption. Another assumption you have to take. Another assumption that you have to believe. Again, you have to believe Matthew was lying. Okay, I got that. We have to believe this ossuary is one of a kind, even though they have four. Okay, I got that. You have to believe there's a conspiracy. Okay, you have to believe that Christians can accept the possibility. Okay, sure. You have to believe that, you know what? The Bible doesn't even begin to talk about Jesus really rising. In fact, the real historical approach says you'd expect to find a body, right? Sure, you have to believe that. You have to believe that the Christian faith is based upon magic. Okay? You have to believe that they know how all the relationships of the ossuaries fit, how they went together. They know that Jesus is the son who was married to the wife, which they don't. But again, you have to believe that. You have to believe that it's unique that Mary Magdalene's name, if it is Mary Magdalene, which I guess that's another assumption. You have to believe that since it is in Greek, it's really, really special. Okay? So you have to believe that. You have to believe that Mary Magdalene, again, on top of all that other stuff, She's in the Bible all over the place having a special relationship with Jesus. Okay? You have to believe, again, it's a big conspiracy. You have to believe that the Gospel of Mary and the Acts of Philip are even more reliable than the Bible. Assumption number 20 that I had in my list, you have to believe that the DNA shows that since Jesus and Mariamne, since they weren't related, again, this proves that they were husband and wife. How foolish this is. This proves that they were husband and wife since they were not related. Dr. Carney Matheson, the one in the documentary who was in charge of the DNA laboratory, said this. There's a statement in the film that has been taken out of context. While marriage is is a possibility, other relationships like father and daughter, paternal cousins, sister-in-law, or indeed two unrelated individuals are also possible. My conclusion is that they are not maternally related. You cannot genetically test for marriage. It's interesting. The guy in the documentary says, you can't even test for that. They took my words out of context. The evidence does not point to them being husband and wife, that Jesus and the Mariamne were husband and wife at all. Upon hearing that, James Tabor, the professor from the University of North Carolina, who was actually helped out with this entire documentary, said that, yeah, the mother of Judah could have easily been Mary or one of the other four unnamed ossuaries. He admitted that it could have been any of them. We don't know who was who at all. But in the documentary, they don't lead you to that statement. Peter Nathan says this, that the human remains of four or five generations could have been stored in a single ossuary. Four or five generations could have been stored in one single ossuary. Again, there aren't any bones. We're not testing the DNA of bones. All the bones were buried properly, just like they did with the other 900 tombs. There was nothing special about this. They had a prayer service with a rabbi over top of the bones. They buried them. And each one could have contained four or five generations. So they take the DNA test by seeing the box, the ossuary that said Jesus, son of Joseph, and the one that says Mary, that they translated as Mariamne. They took a Q-tip, basically, of each one and tested the Q-tip. If there's four or five generations in each box, how do you know whose DNA you even have? There's no possible way to even know. They also go on and begin to speak of the ossuary of James that said, James, son of Joseph, brother of Jesus. And they say that the ossuary that was missing must have been this one that has surfaced. And therefore, this kind of proves that this must have really been the Jesus tomb. Interesting that Obed Golan, he was the antiquities dealer who owns this ossuary. He's been arrested. He's currently on trial for forging artifacts that were linked to Jesus and the Jerusalem temple. In fact, people don't believe it says brother of Jesus at all. In fact, it says James and the son of Joseph, some people believe could be real. The brother of Jesus, most people said there's no way that it could be real. The man who owns that is in prison. Listen to this. When police, or he's on trial anyway. When the police took his home, or I'm sorry, when they took Obed Golan into custody and they searched his apartment, they discovered a workshop with a range of tools, materials, and half-finished antiquities. The police searched his home and they found other ancient relics that were half done. They were half done. He was engraving and carving ossuaries and other things of antiquity that really aren't old at all. Cashing in, making money. Right now, he's on trial. You can find information about his trial on the internet. It's readily available. Again, the links for my notes are all my notes on the internet. Another assumption that Jesus would have named his son Judas. I'm not sure why, but why would Jesus name his son the one who he knew would betray him? That doesn't make any sense at all, does it? Another assumption you have to go with in order to believe this story. I wouldn't have named my son after the one who betrayed me. Another assumption, and we're almost done. At the end of John, Jesus, hanging on the cross, says, "Woman, behold your son." We know the story that Jesus is speaking to his mom and says, "Son, behold your mother." And Jesus is speaking to John, the disciple. In other words, "John, take care of my mom. Mother, this is the son who's going to provide for you." The documentary spins it and says, you know what? As Jesus is saying, "Woman, behold your son. Son, here's your mother." He's speaking to Mary Magdalene. He's speaking to Judas, his son, as they kneel before the cross. In the documentary, they show the exclusive video of the son of Jesus crying as he's clinging on to Mary Magdalene, his mom, watching Jesus die. It's ridiculous, the jump that they make. Can you even begin to read that out of the biblical text? Okay, now they're quoting half a verse. To me, if you don't quote the whole thing, don't even quote it at all. Don't say, "I believe half the verse, but I don't believe the whole thing." Let's see what the verse says. John chapter 19, verse 26. Jesus saw his mother standing near the cross. And he said to her, "Dear woman, here's your son." New Living Translation said, he's clearly talking to his mom. Young's literal translation, "Jesus therefore, having seen his mother and the disciple standing by whom he loved, he saith to his mother, Woman, lo, thy son." Young's literal translation, it's clearly his mom. The message, Jesus saw his mother. He said to his mother, "Woman, here's your son." New King James, he said to his mother, "Woman, here's your son." NIV, he said to his mother. King James, he said to his mother. New American Standard, he said to his mother. Do you see a coincidence there? Do you see a coincidence? Today's English version, he said to his mother, "Here is your son. Behold, your son." You have to assume he's talking to Mary. Clearly, every English translation says mother. You cannot read he was talking to Mary. If you're not going to believe half the verses, don't believe any of the verses. These guys cannot come and quote half a verse when it kind of fits their theory and their hypothesis and not quote the other half when it destroys them and proves them to be wrong. That's foolishness. Lastly, that no one doubts the transcription on the ossuary of Mariamne. They said nobody doubts the ossuary. It says Mariamne, Mary the Master, Mary Magdalene. This must have been Mary Magdalene, they say. Nobody doubts this. Listen again, as I said earlier, Stephen Fan, a noted handwriting expert in Israel, says this, that as you look clearly at the description, again, he's at the University of the Holy Land, as you look clearly at the ossuary and examine closely, I want to encourage you, read the article, the notes, or actually the entire article is in my notes that are online as well. At the very end of the notes, you can read all of Stephen Fan's writing. He says it does not say Mariamne, the Master. That as you look at it, you can clearly see that the first part of the name, Maria, is written in a standard handwriting, a slashing motion. If you can see, the M is made with four slashes. The next A is made in three slashes. The R, which looks like a P, it's the Greek rho, it's made with another slash, and then there's another A later on with three slashes. He says, look at this. Look in the middle, this part that they say is the omne, I believe it says the Greek word chi, and gives some other examples of Greek writing where that looks like the chi that he's speaking of. It's very, very interesting. Then he says the last part, Mara. Mara. is written. And he says, if you notice the chi and the mara at the end, it's written in cursive. Again, the photos are on the screen and they're on the internet as well. But you can see clearly the M is made in a cursive writing with the stylus not leaving the ossuary. The A is made in a cursive motion without the stylus leaving the ossuary. Why is this important? Why am I even talking about this? It's simply this. Stephen Fond, an expert of whom I am not, says clearly by looking at the handwriting, they were written at different times. That it was Mary was buried in the tomb. Mary was buried in the tomb. Years later, or however long, they added "and Martha." Later they added "and Martha." Mara and Martha. If you look at the photos, I think it clearly represents that. From cursive to regular slash lettering, you can see clearly it was written at a different time. Again, I am not the expert. We'll leave that to Stephen Fond, but I am rather convinced by reading his paper. I would encourage you to read that. But again, in order to accept this, actually that last assumption that this is Mariamne and nobody discounts that, listen, that's the largest one of them all. The statistician said if that doesn't say Mariamne, and it's not meaning Mary Magdalene, therefore none of this is true, stop recording the video, stop selling the book, it's all a lie, listen. There is no proof. In fact, I would say that's silly and we need to stop buying the book. A professor from Wilmore, Kentucky at Asbury Theological Seminary says this, Mr. Cameron's claims in the preface to Shmika Jakubowicz's book, The Jesus Family Tomb, is that we have had no hard evidence for the existence of Jesus until now. That ignores mentions in ancient Roman and Jewish historians just as Tacitus, Suetonius, and Josephus. James Cameron opens up and says, be glad, Christians. Through this movie, we just proved that Jesus existed, that there really was a guy named Jesus. How silly is that? There was no doubt in history. Thanks, Mr. Cameron. Thanks, the guy who made up the Terminator. Thanks, the guy who gave us the Titanic. Now we can really trust that there was a Jesus. In closing, Professor Derek Bach says this, there are too many things historically and culturally that have to happen in order for all of this to work. The ifs that lead into the thens are big ifs. And they all have to be there in order for this to work. And at virtually every if, I can say that is a big if. I'm not sure that's actually what is likely to have taken place, knowing what we already know historically about the nature of the first century. He says, look, you need to have a whole lot of ifs, a whole lot of assumptions in order for this to come true. And they're big assumptions, proving the Bible to be ridiculously wrong. To say that the disciples, basically, they knew it was a lie, and they gave up their lives to die a brutal death for a lie. It doesn't make any sense. If Jesus did not rise from the dead, they would not have given their lives. In fact, I would say this. You would have never heard of Jesus. He would have been another man who died. Their friend who they loved, and they would have gave him the best burial they could. The fact that we even know his name today proves that he rose from the dead. It's no coincidence that this book was released right before Easter. That it's ready for purchase. It's no coincidence that they're here to make a lot of money. Listen, as Christians, we don't need to fear these things. As Christians, we don't need to be afraid of what they may find or what they won't find. We know that Jesus rose from the dead. As Christians, we need to think critically about this. In fact, I would say that for those of us here today, none of this even would begin to shake our faith. We know better. And in fact, for those who are in the world who hate Christianity, they don't care about this discovery either because they know it's ridiculous, that there's no way it could possibly be true. My heart is for those of our family and friends and those in our community who half listen to the show, who don't who don't really get a chance to think it through. They're flipping through the channels, and all they see is a presentation of science has proven the Bible wrong again. And they believe that, and their faith is shaken, or more likely, their sinful life is justified. And they say Christians don't have it all together. They don't even know what they're doing. Listen, we need to pray for our family and friends. We need to pray that God will draw them to Himself and reveal Himself to them. In closing, a quote from Time magazine said this: Hollywood, no longer satisfied with trying to undermine Christianity, was taking a shovel, a pickaxe, and a video camera and trying to physically destroy it. The man who showed us Kate Winslet's chest in Titanic was now boasting that he had brought God to Manhattan in a box, and he DNA tested him like a dinosaur femur. What a powerful quote. The ridiculous nature of the guy who showed us nudity in the Titanic was claiming, here's God in a box, and we ran DNA just like we do on dinosaur bones. Listen, how silly. His thought was, this should have been titled The Lost Tomb of Jesus or some guy with the same name. None of us are, nobody discounts that this was some guy named Jesus in a tomb. Again, 21% of society was named Jesus. It's not rare to have an ossuary named Jesus. Not at all. They found four of them that said Jesus, whose dad's name was Joseph. Again, that's not rare at all. Nobody doubts that. Nobody doubts that. But listen, this is clearly not the Jesus of the Bible. And in order for this to be the Jesus of the Bible, you have to do a whole lot of jumping through hoops. A whole lot. It's just not even true. It's bad archaeology. It's bad science. And listen, we do not need to fear anything. Go. Share your faith with your family. Share your faith with your friends. And Jesus, right now I pray for my friends and family here that have heard this, Lord, that you would strengthen their faith and help them, God, as they share their faith with their loved ones. Be praised, God, in Jesus' holy name. Amen.